Assalamu alaikum, peace be with you and welcome to Islam and Life with me, Tariq Ramadan, broadcasting from London. In today's show, we ask the question, what is the view of Islam on building Christian churches in Muslim lands?
A Wahhabi Mufti recently issued a fatwa calling for the destruction of all churches in the Arabian Peninsula. He issued the fatwa in late March, replying to a Kuwaiti lawmaker who asked if Kuwait could ban church construction. The fatwa paves the way for adding an article to the new Kuwaiti constitution that forbids building of new churches. Ahlul Bayt Assembly, a non-governmental Islamic organization based in Iran, condemns the fatwa, saying that it is contrary to both Shia and Sunni traditions and has no precedence in Islamic jurisprudential schools. The Assembly also slams the deadly silence of Muslim scholars in the face of such a fatwa that distorts the image of Islam. It also criticizes international human rights organizations, as well as Western and Christian governments, for their support of the Saudi regime and Wahhabi doctrine. The chairman of a group of European Catholic bishops also has slammed the Saudi Mufti in that his fatwa shows no respect for the religious freedom and free coexistence of religions. This week's Islam and Life asks, what is the view of Islam on building Christian churches in Muslim lands?
This is an important religious question. When it comes to pluralism, when it comes to diversity of religions, we come back to the Islamic tradition and we get it from the very beginning that the Islamic tradition, with all the schools of thoughts and law in the Shia and the Sunni tradition, what is essential is the respect of other religion, and especially, of course, Al-Kitab, the people of the book, meaning by this the Christians and the Jews. But more importantly, what is important is this mutual respect, which is important. And when it comes to respect, it comes to freedom of conscience and freedom of worship, meaning that if you are in a country, you should find a place where you can worship the way you want to worship God and your religion, and to practice your religion at the same time. While we have these days problems in the Muslim majority countries as well as in the West when it comes to practicing the religion, let us come first and ask the questions about what is the positions on what are the positions that we can find in the Islamic tradition, and at the same time to look at what's happening now in the Muslim majority countries as well as in the West. Critical questions for our time, where we are pluralistic societies where religions and culture and people of different backgrounds are living together. And to answer all these questions, I'm joined by Muslim scholar Ahmad Hanif from Islamic Center of England. Thank you so much for being with us today. Let me start with the big question and the big picture. What is the view, if we come to the common positions that we may find among the scholar in the mainstream Islamic traditions, in the Shia tradition as well as in the Sunni tradition, what is the mainstream position about, you know, churches in Muslim lands and in Muslim majority countries?
Well, assalamu alaikum. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. I think clearly if one looks at the history of Islam and Islam's encounter with especially the people of the book, and by extension also from different faiths, for example Zoroastrianism and even Hinduism, as you find in India, you would find that Islam by and large tended to have a very surprising accommodationist type of attitude to these religions, which would go to even the extent of being influenced, for example, by the architecture of some of these religions, you know, in some cultural areas. For example, it is well known that the ever-present dome of masajid in Islam,
mosques,
yes, mm-hmm. finds its origin among the Byzantine churches where Islam first encountered this type of structure, because mosques were not supposed to have roofs. The sky was supposed to be a roof. Mm. And architecturally speaking, the dome is the best symbolic representation of the sky. Mm-hmm. You know, when we look at how Muslims encountered Christians, they encountered Christians by and large on a tolerant and accommodationist type of a level. And so people had the right to build churches, had the right for churches to continue to exist. For example, Muslims avoided occupying churches and taking them over, especially when they were in use by the people, and so on.
Let us start maybe with this point in history, because I think that the relationship between principles and history is quite important.
Right.
When, for example, it is said that Omar, radiallahu anhu, arriving in Jerusalem,
right,
didn't want to pray within the church.
Exactly.
Saying, if the people are going to know that I prayed within, they are going to destroy it and to build a mosque. So he
right.
prayed outside, out of respect to the church that was there at that moment. Meaning that we are showing respect in what is and in what should come with the presence of Christians. So now, if we listen to the principle and we have this history of, you know, people respecting churches, even, you know, also having with Abd al-Qadir, the Sufi scholar, and at the same time the great Algerian scholar, protecting the Christians in the church in Lebanon. We have this story of, you know, respect. It's essential to the Islamic teaching. Now, very often when we are in the West, we hear people saying, that's not the reality, it's very difficult to build churches in Muslim-majority countries, and it's impossible in some specific area. And the first example that he has cited and quoted is, of course, Saudi Arabia. And we saw in the clip the Mufti saying, we have to avoid having churches. So how
right.
how can we explain this discrepancy, according to you?
The only exception to the rule, basically, is Mecca, you know, which is a special area with respect to Muslim laws and rules in terms of worship and so on.
Because it's considered as a mosque in
as
itself.
As a mosque in itself, mm-hmm. right?
Mm-hmm.
And it would be as unthinkable to build a mosque in Mecca as it would be unthinkable for a Catholic to have a mosque built in St. Peter's Basilica.
Mm. Which is
you see what I mean?
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
You know, so this is understandable. I think there is a negative type of response of Muslims towards building churches in the world. This cannot be denied, you know. And I think part
denied by whom and where?
Denied in terms of the fact of people experiencing this, you know. It is not something across the board.
Okay.
Okay.
You mean in Muslim-majority countries?
Yes.
Yeah.
It's not something across the board. And it is not something that is cut in stone.
Hmm.
I think it, for one thing, we're talking about the people who tend to level this type of accusation are people who are not from that area, first of all. You find that in Muslim majority countries, you have very stable Christian populations that have been there from time immemorial. You know, the general flow of immigration and population movements are from Muslim countries to Western countries, not from Western countries to Muslim countries. You might find small groups of expatriate workers and so on in Muslim lands. Yes, the Filipinos in Saudi Arabia and so forth, who might not be there in any kind of significant numbers, concentration, organization or rootedness in that place to say that they will build a church there for them, you know, but there should be accommodation for their type, for their worship, you see.
But still, there is a problem in some countries. We saw this when in Iraq, for example, when the people were living and saying churches are attacked. We got also problems in Egypt with
right.
the Coptic community.
Right.
And the people are saying, that's all fine. The overall discourse and the vision of Islam is very open and respectful, but what is happening on the ground
right.
is completely different.
Right.
So there is no ground on Islamic ground for this attitude. This has something that has to do much more with political reasons and dynamics
exactly.
within the society. So what would be the answer from Muslims when they are witnessing this?
Yes.
and to avoid a state of denial, yes, and to come to recognition and to reform the situation. Mm.
This, I think this type of hostility goes back to, Muslim populations feeling a sense of threat by the power and the infiltration, one can say, of Western ideas that is threatening their own cultural approach. Because they see the West as Christian, which is a mistake, really, because the West is very anti-Christian. But because they see the West...
Not always anti, but at least forgetting what
Christianity is. Yes, materialism, you know, as Christian. Okay, they see Christian minorities now as a sort of a fifth column of the West, you see. Also because of this type of a hierarchical imposition on the minds of people in terms of a false idea of progress, the West being the most progressive, meeting the most advanced, et cetera, in science, you know, and this idea that the West is Christian does tend to have some kind of influence upon these Christian minorities, for example, to see themselves now no longer as part of the society, but sometimes as part of a wider, much more advanced type of entity, and it might convey itself in attitudes and so on, especially among the youth and so forth. So you have these types of tensions taking place. But I think especially more importantly is a lack of education of the people. I don't mean that the people are uneducated, but the people being aware, you know, of how Islam looks at Christianity and how Islam is tolerant towards other religions.
Yes, what you are saying, in fact, is that the behavior that we have at the grassroots level or sometimes coming from governments has nothing to do with the very deep and long Islamic tradition.
Exactly.
And the best is not that Islam is against churches, is that if we come back to Islam, we will be more open about churches.
Exactly.
And the way we have to deal with them. There are two main questions. And the first one still is, you mentioned about, for example, the only exception is Mecca. Still what we have, and especially in the Sunni tradition, is to say it's not only Mecca is Al Jazeera Al Arabiya. It's all, you know, Saudi Arabia and all the peninsula that we have. There will be only one religion on the peninsula, and this is a hadith. And by saying this, this is why you have in Saudi Arabia no visible church. You have one in Qatar, but it's very discreet. And based on this, because you have some religious trends that are very tough on this, we don't want Christianity. And still the problem is that we invite the people in the...
The hadith is a hadith that is predicting something. It is not commanding something. It is not commanding the eradication of churches or the eradication of Christians.
So this is the interpretation, because for some it was with the presence of the Prophet, peace be upon him, and the following years, it should be avoided having churches. And this is why on one hadith, there is something which is a principle of Islam. You invite Christians and we avoid and we prevent them from practicing their religion. So this is something which is not really disputed sometimes by the scholars, but it's a problem because it's a discrepancy between the principles and what we are doing.
Exactly. So this hadith is purely predictive. You know, just like, for example, North Africa. North Africa was very Christian before the coming of Islam. You know, after the coming of Islam, the people had such an affinity towards it that North Africa now you have very, very few Christians up there. You know, I think the same thing is with the Arabian Peninsula. You know, there were large populations of Christians and Jews, you know, but these peoples became absorbed into the Muslim population, either by conversion, by intermarriage, and so forth and so on. So now that hadith has become a reality, you see. But if we had Christians and Jews still living in the Arabian Peninsula, it would be their right for them to have places of worship. Should,
and even in the peninsula, if you invite, you know, people, whatever is their religion, you cannot then invite them and say, about your faith, we don't want to see anything. It's not in tune. It's not the Islamic message per se. Now, let me just come to one thing, which is also something that we hear. Because you have problem in Muslim majority countries, and this is why we're living in the West, in Canada, in the United States of America, in Europe, say, okay, we have problem building churches in the Muslim majority countries, so this is why you should have problem. And there is something which is reciprocity and mutuality between this and that. What would be the answer of Muslims? Because what sometimes the behavior of some Muslims in the Muslim majority countries is problematic. And then they come in the West and they live in the West and they are Western citizens and they want their right to be respected. And you have people saying, no, we are going to respect your rights if you don't respect ours in the Muslim majority countries. So what would be your answer to this?
I think first of all, these people have to understand that it is because of Western cultural imperialism itself, okay, that leads to incidents of intolerance in the Muslim world, one. Also because of the fact that the Western countries, Western polities support certain regressive types of Islam as, you know, manifested in certain countries that they support. Mm-hmm. You know, you have certain types
of... literalists and...
the literalists, the attack theories so forth and so on, right? You have these narrow views. If you look at in these Muslim countries, you know, the people who spearhead this type of intolerance are people who have a very, very narrow view of Islam and who are not just against Christians, but against anybody, any Muslim.
And even other Muslims,
Who don't share their point of view. So they have to recognize that these incidents are very marginal incidents that exist in society. Secondly, Western countries are, to a greater or lesser extent, multicultural. Yeah. They are multicultural. They do believe in the right of people to practice whatever they believe in, you know. Mm. They do believe in freedom of thought, okay. They do believe in freedom of organization, all without threatening the state. Mm. Western countries, one can say that a great deal of their dynamism and creativity is based precisely upon this, precisely upon the contributions different communities bring to these societies, you see?
Yes, but the point remained that if we now look at what is happening, for example, my own country, Switzerland, where minarets were banned, it's very difficult for people who are trying to get an independent mosque, which is not connected to a foreign country. For example, if you come with, you know, petrol dollars, and you can build because the money is giving you rights in the West very often. But when you want to have a community mosque which is independent, it's very difficult because you are not trusted, and the people are saying, yes, we are for freedom of worship, but still we don't know which trend you are representing. Are you fundamentalist? Are you extremist? And there is a great deal of mistrust and fear. And then they add to this what is happening in the Muslim majority countries is wrong. And we keep on repeating, for example, in our discussion with them, is that it's not, you know, human rights is not a question of trade. It's not you give because you got. You give because this is a matter of principles. Right. And then we are not, you know, following the example of dictatorships and people. We need to sit and to stick to our principles. Still, it's problematic. What could be done from a Muslim viewpoint to change these wrong perceptions and to move on, to go to something which is more positive?
Well, I think one of the most important things, when you look at a lot of Muslim, the Muslim population in many of these countries, many of them see themselves as merely guests in those countries, even though they possess a passport to that country, you know?
They still feel that they're
guests. They still feel that they're guests, you know? There's a very little interface between the Muslim population and the host country or their home country, which is their new country. There's very little interface between them, you know, and so therefore they are treated as the archetypal other. I think one of the most important things for Muslims, the onus is upon us. Okay, on the other side, we're dealing with ignorance of Muslims. right? I mean, the people who clamor for the building of churches in Muslim countries are largely people like Pentecostalists and you know, extremist Protestants and so on, who just want to stoke some fires. They don't belong to these places. They don't live there. You know what I mean? They just want to create a crisis situation. You know, but by and large, Muslim populations do not integrate so easily. You find that people who integrate, it's a kind of an extreme type of thing. The ones who are integrated, they lose their Islam. The ones whose Islam is strong tend to sort of like shy away from interaction. You know, I'm speaking as a convert to Islam here. You know what I mean? Because I have absolutely no problem, you know, as a Muslim, you know, engaging in social intercourse with people who are not Muslim, you know, from religious people to atheists, you see? And I think Muslims have to sort of develop this. Maybe it is because our presence in the West as immigrants is a recent one. Because remember, it's only until recently, for example, in Canada and America that immigration rules were expanded. Before, they were quite racist. You know, expanded to include Muslims, you know, and because of the crises in the Muslim world that people are coming here as, you know, immigrants and so forth. But I think the onus is on us.
Thank you so much for that. I think that what was important in our discussion is first just to come back and to say, if we come back to the principles of Islam, we can understand that sometimes it's because the Muslims are forgetting the very principles of Islam that they can behave by rejecting the churches and rejecting the Christians. If you come back to Islam, Islam should be the driving force and the driving teachings, helping the Muslim to understand that we have to respect the freedom of worship and freedom of conscience for the Christians, for the Jews, for any people who have other faiths than ours, and then to start with this principle and to reform. And very often it's not done for other reasons. Historical reasons, bad relationship, tensions, colonization, and this has to be solved as something which is important. And even in the peninsula, even in Saudi Arabia, even elsewhere, when we have Christians, it's normal for them to be able to practice, with the exception, of course, of the mosque for the Muslim, which is the central mosque of all their longing and coming to the pilgrimage, is Mecca, which is something which is specific. And the second point that we made is really about what is happening in the West, and the Muslims here should not trade their rights. They should know what are their rights, and to feel and to belong to the countries as something which is the starting point to make mosques as normal as their presence. This will be the future. Thank you for that. Well, that's all we have time for. Please let us know your thoughts and views on any of the shows you have seen, and here is the way to contact us.
Islam in Life welcomes your opinion. So please send us your suggestions as well as criticisms on any of the shows you have seen or would like to see. You can do all this by emailing us at islamandlife@presstv.co.uk. You can also be part of our online platform by joining our Facebook page, Islam and Life, on Press TV, where you can share your thoughts with other Islam and Life fans, engage with debates, and view past shows.
Finally, I would like to thank my guest, Ahmed Hanif. Thank you so much for your input and your presence with us. And I hope to see you next week, inshallah. We'll be right back.